Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And Malcolm, when you think about a guy that we love bringing him on a show, Lorenzo, you know,
Lorenzo Alexander.
Alexander, here's a guy who made his bucks on special teams.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then all of a sudden played it enough that, you know, hey, look, they made it now in his latter part of his career as this full-time starter. I think that you look at Malcolm, guys that you just talked about there, Dibs, those veteran players, if they want to make this ball squad, these guys are going to have to step up and play some special teams as well.
The good Andre Greenlaw, 6 solo tackles Saturday night, 1 tackle for loss, the instincts and the speed. He can get across the field in a hurry. And in this day and age, gone is the era of Jeremiah Trotter.
Yep.
The big middle linebacker who's going to try to shed the blockers like Lowe coming through the line, try to make a tackle. You've got to play with speed at all three levels in this era of the NFL. That's the good with Dre Greenlaw. The bad, he had the roughing the passer penalty, which extended a drive. That was third down. But he did come back on the next play and showed resilience. That was the tackle for loss. I think it was a 4-yard tackle for loss. So make a mistake, forget about it, go back out there and make a play. So you like to see that. But again, that was a foolish play.
Got
to be better with that.
Yep.
And number two, I think it was the first Dallas offensive drive. He gave up a big completion. He got lost in coverage. But this is us nitpicking. We're very thorough with our analysis. He's someone to keep in mind. He's the type of guy that's going to make Malcolm Smith expendable. When you start looking at some of the names that might get cut by week one, two of the veteran names that are starting to float around, Jordan Matthews, who we didn't see at all Saturday night, the wide receiver, they signed him for like $1.2 million. He's an easy cut. And Malcolm Smith, look, the veteran presence would be great at linebacker. It would be great. But guess what? He's never healthy. He's never healthy. All you hear about with Malcolm Smith is he was having a great camp until. He was having great OTAs until. And then it's this time around, it's the collarbone. He can't play. He just can't get on the field. The health is a concern. Greenlaw might make him expendable. Keep that in mind. Who flashed to you?
I went into the secondary, and I was just having my eyes on Marcel Harris when he was out there, a guy who had 5 tackles. And
this is one you like as well?
Yeah. You start to look at the safety position, and we mentioned Adrian Colbert, who is a bit of a thumper, but he did get ejected for the hit, and you start to think about the depth of that position. And I think Marcel Harris is a guy who eventually could wind up starting in this defense because he can play solid in coverage and he brings a little bit of lumber to the run game as well. Defensively, I think Greenlaw was the first guy who popped, but Marcel Harris is the guy I had my eyes on all night.
And Marcel Harris, what he does too, Dibs, like you mentioned, the guy has a nose for the ball and he can cover. I watched him even when Dallas is a third down receiver right there in the middle of the field. He comes creeping down and he starts to close that gap. You hear the receiver here steps. Incomplete pass would have been a huge third down to keep the chains moving. This guy is around the ball. Like what he's doing. He's very instinctive. This kid is making the team without a doubt. I like where you're going with this guy. He can play. He can run. He can hit. He can play some special teams. He is going to be pushing and nipping at someone's heel.
While we're speaking of the secondary, he's getting ready to enter his second year. Tavarius Moore, the free safety, played corner last year. He was the third round pick out of Southern Miss. They love him because he ran 4.3. He ran 4.3 and change in the 40, and he's tall, 6'2". That's why they tried to convert him to corner. They wanted to put this cover 3 defense together like you saw in Seattle. Remember, the original version of the Legion of Boom was Sherman and Brandon Browner, two very tall, very physical corners. They made a change with some of the coaches on the defense, and they're not necessarily prioritizing height at the corner position, and they realize more speed gives him a ton of range if they're to play him at free safety. Adrian Colbert, we mentioned earlier, got ejected from that game. Filled in nicely at times last year, but he looks like he could be the odd man out. It comes down to Jimmy Ward, who's always hurt, another one of those guys, and Tavarius Moore, and that's the guy you want to see. He's got a lot to work on, but making the transition from corner to safety, he knows another element of the secondary now. He's more educated in terms of NFL defenses, having spent a year in the league. This is a guy with a ton of range. You need that. You need that click and close, that ability to get from point A to point B faster than anybody else. I mean, if you're going to play a team like the Chiefs, if you're going to play some of these teams that just trot speed out there for days, you got 2 games this year against the Rams. That is a fast team. You're going to need guys that can move. Moore's the guy you want to circle as someone moving forward. I think most people right now are projecting him as the backup to Jimmy Ward. I would not be surprised if he takes over as a starter at some point. Remember, last year he's a third-round pick. You don't draft third-rounders in the hope that they make your team. Third-rounders should start for you.
Right, and you look at the backup to the backup, Anton Exum Jr., who had two passes defensed. And by the way, he had a pick six last year, one of only two interceptions on your team. So I think when we start to look at the surprise cuts, I think Jimmy Ward eventually might be the guy who gets cut. I know that they reinvested in Jimmy, but the cap hit is not that much. I think it's about $1.5 million or something if they decide to move on from Jimmy. If you can't stay healthy and you've got guys ahead of you who are healthy and are making plays, I would predict that Jimmy Ward gets cut, Joe.
And you look at Moore and you think, okay, what is this guy? What is going to be the biggest thing for him to do? You think about corner Daniel. You're locked up in front of a guy, and he's right there in front of you. You're playing man. You're in his hips. You're in his grill. You're watching his hips. It's hand movement. It's making sure that, hey, you know where your safety is. So you know where technique. Okay, how I'm going to funnel this guy in. Ride his upfield shoulder. How I'm going to let him go in. Force him into my safety. Those different things when you're playing corner, and then at times you're playing some zone so you can drop on that corner position and get straight back. You're just kind of watching what's in front of you in that area. Now you're asking a guy to move over. Why? Because here's the thing. He wasn't playing corner at a great, great high level. So they're saying the guy's got speed. Let's move him back to safety where he's played corner, but now let's go back to safety. Now you're playing safety. Now you're asking this guy. Now he's got not just take his eyes off a man. Now you got to look and see the whole field. So now it's going to be a little bit more hesitant. Can you get the guy? Can you move him with your eyes? Is that going to be the biggest factor? So I don't see this guy walking in and starting. I don't see the instincts that you saw when you talked about Harris. Don't see that yet. Moore can play, but I think that he's more of a work in progress. I don't see this guy stepping on the field week one, two, three, early and coming in and starting. You just can't do it. Too much young guys out there. You got to have someone that has a little bit more season. You can't just throw that guy out there.
Makes sense. Makes sense. We haven't touched on it yet, so let's get to it now. The quarterback battle. The chase for the number two possession. Nick Mullins got the early portion of the game. C.J. Beathard got the later portion of the game. What did you see? Did either guy distinguish himself from the other in this race for the backup job?
No, they really didn't. I thought both of them played pretty well. I thought both of them were competitive. I thought you saw the way Mullins goes out there. I think that he has that poise, and he goes out there, and you just see he believes it. He just, when you watch him, his body language and everything, he says he's ready.
He's all about hanging in that pocket.
Yeah.
He will hang in there to the last minute. I love that about him.
He will hang, and I saw the one time the interception. You saw him. He stared down the guy, and the linebacker's able to jump under coverage. It was two guys. He tried to get a little bit greedy because he kept staring. Had the running back, Walter, right underneath. Could have just dinked it down, but he tried to go for a little bit more.
See a little Brett Favre in him.
You know what? See a little Brett in him. The guy is a gunslinger, and he likes to move outside the pocket. I like him outside on the move. The guy makes great – I think he's a good decision maker. And then you watch, you know, CJ, he struggled early, and then he started to come in and get his rhythm, start throwing the ball. I know he wish he could have one back, and that's Debo Center. Debo Center, he Deboed that ball and grabbed it, took it, and made it a great catch, but he made it look too hard. They made that play, should have been way easier. If he hits him in stride, he's still running. He's wide open in the end zone. He scores on that one, didn't
he? I think you just answered the question in a roundabout way, because to me, it was Nick Mullins, and it was pretty clear, not only because of what you said about how Nick looked out there, the confidence, the moxie, the throws. He made the one mistake on the pick, but C.J. Beathard comes in, and the biggest play he had to make, he underthrew that ball to Debo by about 10 yards. Debo had 5 yards easy, little stop-and-go route, the corner bit on the fake, and he was wide open. C.J. needs to make that throw. To me, it's pretty clear that it's Nick Mullins' job to lose as the backup.
He made some good throws, though. You got to admit, C.J. Beathard, when he started getting in his rhythm, he was throwing some dimes, too, that nice where they flooded the zone, and you saw Debo come out of nowhere. Herd thinks it's coming. Jalen's thinking it's coming to him. He's sliding on the ground to catch it. Debo runs that out and just snatches that, comes out of nowhere. The officials even got – you guys, the Zebras got confused. They threw a flag. Didn't know what the hell they're looking at. As usual, the Zebras can do that, Dib. So
preseason game number one.
Yeah, so what was that?
Yeah, I'm
all
sure
about?
They picked
what,
up the what, flag.
Yeah,
did they not?
They did. But what was that all about? What were you guys thinking, honestly?
I wasn't on the field,
I'm sorry.
I can't really speak to what they were thinking when they made that call. You actually were closer to it than I was. So for you to not have that awareness Maybe you
That's
just
why I brought it
maybe
up.
You just felt that play. Maybe you're in the parking lot or something.
All right, we were doing a nice job. We were doing a really nice job. It's fine. You took a shot at him. He fired back. Are we even? Do we all feel as if we're even?
I don't know. We'll see.
We're even. We're
if we're even, he's leaving.
It's good enough for me. Speaking of the TV appearance, nice job on the bingo. You hit a few.
I was trying to get him in. I got a roses in at the end. I don't know if you caught that one.
I caught early on. I'm sitting there, and I was excited. I was really excited. I had my bingo card. I was tweeted out. I'm like, all right, this is going to be great. So it goes to you and O'Donnell on the sideline in your chairs. I thought you looked fantastic. You got the million-dollar smile.
George Foreman.
Exactly why people tune in. He looks fantastic. And you're working your way through it early. And I'm disappointed right out of the gate because he takes it seriously. And I probably should have realized that's what you're going to do. I wanted a clown show right from the beginning.
Totally.
I wanted O'Donnell to have to deal with what I have to deal with on a regular basis.
The crazy thing about it, Joe, the reason why I didn't clown early, they had like a 5-second delay. That's why I heard O'Donnell kind of.
Don't try to make the excuse for the looking at the phone where I caught you and then I blasted you on social for that. Did everyone see that?
I didn't see that.
Him looking at his phone on live TV.
No.
You deal with delays. Be a pro.
No, and it's so that.
You know what?
It's up on Twitter right now.
I'm looking at the picture right now.
It's egregious.
No. The phone. True friend, I did not have my phone. I was looking at my.
You had your phone out. Yes, you did.
True. I had them both. I had them sitting there.
Just because you give me the word
true friend,
doesn't mean anything to me. Now, if you say truly, I'll tell you White Claw's better. But at least you're giving me something.
I saw that.
All you can see is the grilled cheese. For those of you not, follow us on Twitter at Jolo and Dibs.
I wish that I would like you guys would have been you would have been impressed because when it got the back in your ears and you're like talking in. 4 seconds later, it's saying what you're saying. It's in your ear. I was like, dude, it was kind of.
When that happens, I know exactly what you're talking about.
With the mix minus.
The mix minus was just. I was like, coach,
indoor. How about that? Indoor. What are you? This isn't Black Hawk Down. You're not trying to escape Somalia. You got feedback in your ear.
Work through it, big guy.
It's not like the hit was like 3.5 hours.
No. I know. I'm just. It's tough, Joe. Trust me.
Of all the bingo possibilities, though, you know the first one he got in. LeBron, of course. LeBron was the first thing. And then he looks at the camera and he's smiling. And I know he's looking right at me. It's just piercing my soul.
Because I got your text, you and Dibs. I'm like, yes, I'm going right at him with LeBron. One that they always say. Oh, you know what?
I thought you didn't have your phone.
I got a text before.
I was blowing him up through the whole thing.
Yeah, and
I was blowing him up through the whole thing. I was trying to distract him. It was good, though. No, it was you guys did great work. And then you knocked, what other ones you got? I heard you got, I didn't catch all of the posts.
Okay.
Because I had one kid, we got potty training, got a million things going on.
I think I got Sure, man.
And I saw the whole pre, and I saw part of the post. You got Sure. There was an uptick. I heard Hirosius got
Hirosius, offense entertains, defense wins championship.
That's a good one, yeah.
I got that in.
So nice.
I was trying to get a couple in for you.
Any Hush Hog, I Hear a Bear, or Every Bee That Ever was partly singing, partly buzz.
Was that on the bingo?
No, but going forward, I know you have another game, right?
You've got another one.
So
we'll, I'll be a little.
That's going to be preseason game 4, I take it, because the next two are on the road. They're at Denver and then at Kansas City for 2 and 3.
Okay.
So you're going to get preseason game 4.
Yeah, and the last, I'll probably get all of them in. The
vault, I guess I would say. Yeah. There are a lot of things you can't say there because people get upset nowadays.
You got to get the card, and then I'll look at it, and I'll just make sure. It'd be a lot. I'll load them up, there, you, Daniel. A
lot of pictures. People were doing a great job. The billions turned out for all of this. I got it started with the picture of him looking at the phone.
Yeah.
Then someone got the zoom in of the crooked finger. That one was very popular.
Wow.
Yeah, because you're very animated when you talk. You got your hands moving around. It's great. But someone paused it and then took a picture of the crooked finger, and we turned that into a thread on social. Lots of grilled cheese comments as well.
The grilled cheese.
Maybe you should wear a fedora the next time out.
You know what? Maybe I'll just have a sandwich, a grilled cheese sandwich for the listeners.
I was thinking you could put like an olive on a toothpick and just have it sticking out of the top of your head, right out of the grilled cheese.
Oh, my God.
Right off his forehead, you know?
Wow.
or the toothpick with the colored little paper on the top, you know? It goes all the way through the sandwich.
We'll do prop bets and everything.
Oh, my God.
Great.
So good.
You looked awesome, though. It was nice to see you up there.
Yeah, it was fun. It was
looking
fun.
Slim.
But it was fun. I had a good time.
A casual approach to the dress, I noticed, while everyone else was going jackets and ties and whatnot. The big man can't be hassled with that sort of thing. I like that. Yeah, that's when you know you got true gravitas as a celebrity.
No.
Sure.
I was dressed the part, you know, just, you know.
A nice collared shirt tucked in. You looked very good.
Yeah.
I was saying, you're able to get away without wearing the jacket. It's that's a nice luxury to have. That's when you know you're a cut above. A lot of individuals. No. The rest of this station. If you're to put any of us on TV, you can't get away with no jacket.
Right.
I was sweating like a preacher in a pulpit out there. The jacket. I would have probably melted out there. It was hot.
Again, not Black Hawk Down. You're not trying to escape Somalia, war torn like those guys were. It was a little warm, and you had feedback in your ear.
You seen
TV hit. It's not an undercover operation.
Dims. Glenn had on just a...
Vern Glenn had,
you know, and he shout out Vern Glenn. He said he had a grunt of a time at Fresno. He said, man, Lo, I didn't know Fresno was that nice. He went out there a couple weeks ago and just raved about it. And he said, I should call in and tell the guys to leave Fresno alone. I'm a believer in Fresno. So just wanted to let you guys know that about that.
Sounds made up.
No,
very
no, no.
dubious. Highly dubious.
Who would say, man, I didn't know Fresno was that nice? That's what people say about, Cabo. Like, I didn't realize Cabo was that awesome.
Seriously.
I did not know South Beach was that cool.
True.
No one's ever been like, man, I had no idea Fresno was that nice.
True.
It's a hot farm.
I'm just telling you what the guy told me.
I'm not believing that, though. I'm not believing that he said that to you.
Let's get him on.
Yes, and perhaps let's see if he wants to pack his things and move there from his current locale of Mill Valley, California. I'm sure Fresno's far, far nicer this time of year.
Maybe he likes it so much he could become one of those super commuters we've been hearing so much about.
They're going to get the bullet train. They're getting the train in there.
Everyone's getting a train. L.A. to Vegas, I've been hearing about that train for 20 years. This other train you speak of every year. Everybody's getting a train. You ever notice that? Everyone's getting a train, but yet there are no trains.
But they're building it.
I actually can see it going. Of course, it's coming.
Yeah.
Coach, what's happening faster? This train is being built, or the pride of Fresno, Bryson DeChambeau, is actually going to hit his golf ball? Which is likelier to happen first?
That's another problem.
My God, Fresno, hit the ball.
That's the sound of a man working on the chain. Gang.
Nice. Trying to help you out.
All right, let's bring it back to this. While we're still here, the Niners weren't the only thing in town this weekend.
Pilar whacks the ball into the right center field gap. That's trouble. Into Triples Alley. Longoria scores. Pilar to third.
Nice series. Giants take the Phillies. For three of the four games, they win yesterday 9-6 in a wildly entertaining game that Bochy was managing as if it was Game 7 of the World Series. Menez didn't have it, so he got the early hook. Bochy was at his sharpest yesterday. I don't think I've seen him manage a game like that since the playoff game. And that's not to say the other games have been managed poorly. It's just to say that you saw how important that was to him. May 23rd, Menez is getting a longer leash, no doubt. And that was Kapler's big mistake. Outside of not buttoning the top button on his jersey and his super cool sunglasses, because apparently he's trying to make some statement from the dugout steps, he just went ahead and let Arrieta keep pitching. Everyone on earth could have told you Arrieta didn't have it yesterday, except for the guy who's tasked with making the decision as to whether or not he has it. And he leaves him in there, up 5-2, gone is the lead. Giants kept pushing. But Bochy managed that thing like it was a playoff game, and they came away with the win. So however this is all going to shake down, this team continues to fight tooth and nail. They are not the better of those two teams. You put those two teams out and on paper, option A, option B. All the stats, all the numbers, everything you need except player names, everyone's taking option A, the Phillies. Right up until you realize that the Phillies lack the one thing the Giants have in abundance. Guys who play for the team. That's what you saw over the course of this weekend. That four-game series in the Giant dugout, it's a collection of players who are playing for the greater good of the team. And the Philly dugout, it's a collection of individuals playing for themselves. And that was the difference in most of those games. You saw the Philly spirit break in every one of those losses. Even the game the Giants lost, they kept coming. Vogt had a Bonzian home run that almost cleared the cove. That thing was ridiculous.
Yeah, big home runs, big performance for the weekend. Evan Longoria adding one to my lead over Low. Now my prodigious two-homer lead, 14-12. Longoria greater than Belt, as I indicated he would be way back in March. But
you're up by one until yesterday.
And now I doubled the lead.
Did the lead not double yesterday?
For Belt, that could be insurmountable.
He may not homer again in his major league career. He's now a leadoff hitter. And by the way, 0-for-3 yesterday as his average dips. Watch me dip to 229.
Belt, he hears you. Belt, do your thing.
229.
He listens to the show, guys. He's going to come back.
Longo, by the way, 3-for-4 with two runs batted in. He scored a pair as his average soars to 249. Soars!
Ooh. Yeah, 249.
To 249.
Well, you know what you saw over the weekend? In a four-game series, the Giants hit 8 home runs. The park is not the problem. The park is not the problem. It's the lineup. They had no problem hitting 8 home runs in 4 games against Philadelphia. Granted, the Phillies give up a lot of home runs, but look at who hit them. Yaz, 2. Pilar, 2. Ricard, 1. Boat, 1. Longoria, 1. Jeanette, 1. Longoria was the only guy on the team on opening day. The only guy on the big league roster on opening day. The other 7 of those 8 home runs came from acquisitions, trades, call-ups, you name it. If you put some guys in there that can actually hit, guess what? They'll hit.
Yeah.
They'll clear the fence. How many home runs did Yaz just miss by a foot or two? He was blasting shots off the wall all weekend.
And he continues to look great, a guy who hasn't slowed down, even though Alex Dickerson hasn't played in about a month. Yastrzemski has continued to deliver. And this lineup, you know, when you can get guys to produce outside of who you would expect, all of a sudden you have a team that can be explosive. You mentioned Philadelphia's shaky pitching. The Giants threw 8 guys at the Phillies, in large part because Samardzija went 8 the day before, and you had an off day today, so Boch was loving it. Even in the ESPN interview that he's forced to do in these national games, I think it was Vaskersian who asked him, you must really dread these kind of games. And he's like, no, these are the games I love, where you get a chance to actually manage. And you, like you say, you throw Menez for 1 2/3, then Jandel Gustav gets 2 outs, and everybody go in there and get your 2 or 3 outs.
Pitchers were hitting all over the place.
Suarez.
How many pitchers got in that bat yesterday? Will Smith, first career at bat, results in a hit with 2 RBIs. There's this story after the game about, oh, you know, how to work with the bat. Like, what bat did you use? Before the season, they asked me what I wanted. I said, just give me what Bumgarner has. That's how much thought he puts into it. And yet Nick Pivetta couldn't get him out. Which begs the question, why is Nick Pivetta on the mound in a high leverage situation? Who knows? That's for handsome Gabe Kapler to figure out as the Phillies continue their downfall.
Truth is, though,
get your split hats out.
Oh, because it's coming.
Bridge series starts tomorrow. Get the split hats out. Anna nodding yes. She's a huge fan of the split hats.
I knew that Anna was a fan of that.
She's always been a fan. Always. The question is the rest of the staff.
Right.
Yeehaw.
Anna and the split hat phenomenon brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Yeehaw. Go in there and get yourself a checking account and a savings account. It's the split hat of banking. We got a lot to get to. A lot to get to regarding the concerns, the highlights, everything from what went down in Santa Clara, plus the Antonio Brown helmet situation. It's got to be addressed. I mean, if it's not frostbite, it's a helmet situation. This is the story to end all stories. But first, here's Anna with what's coming up on the game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Canon Megatank Printers. Joe and Dibs are breaking down the 49ers' first preseason victory over the Cowboys. Who stood out in the game and who's poised for a big season? We'll ask former Niner and analyst Ian Williams at 9:05. Unfortunately, the injury bug bites again. Wide receiver Trent Taylor was out after sustaining a fracture in his foot on Friday. Another big loss during the game, though, was swing tackle Sean Coleman. The 49ers will reportedly acquire journeyman offensive lineman Sam Young in his place. The guys will review the rest of the players who got hurt. And despite Antonio Brown's helmet drama, the Raiders won their preseason matchup against the Rams. In baseball, Giants took 3 of 4 from the Phillies after an exciting 9-6 victory. San Francisco also announced that they will retire Will Clark's number 22. The announcement came when many members of the 1989 team were honored yesterday. One of those players, 1989 NL MVP Kevin Mitchell. He'll hop on the show to talk about the festivities at 8:30. The A's take 2 of 3 from the White Sox and remain half a game and a half back of the wild card race. I'm Anna Kagadagis on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you, our Monday-bound listening audience. Because we love you, because there's a lot to get to here, some of which we just have some fantastic storylines. First and foremost, your guests who will be appearing on the Dialpad guest line. As a reminder, all guests appear on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video messages, and meetings across existing devices. Kevin Mitchell, in 1 hour at 8:30, 1989 NL MVP, stood us up on Friday. See if he tries to pull that again today. We'll also ask him about Will Clark. Great news over the weekend that the Giants would be retiring that number sometime next season. Ian Williams at 9:05. Cam Inman with the latest from Niner training camp at 9:30. Let's start right here. How excited should the Niner fan base be over what they saw from the 2 rookie wide receivers Saturday night down in Santa Clara? Jalen Hurd and Deebo Samuel. Both were making plays all over the field. And that seemed to be the number one talking point after the game. People excited about the wide receiving unit, a unit that has been, shall we say, producing below average results for quite some time.
Yeah, people should be excited. And these two young guys, they didn't disappoint the fans. We heard early in camp, Jalen Hurd was pushing guys around, blocking down the field, pestering guys. Guys didn't like it. And you know what? You saw a guy take what he did on the practice field and take it to the game. I was kind of surprised at his performance, Joe. Here's a guy, he's physical. You saw him run right across the middle on the goal line, gets hit about 5 yards before he gets in the end zone. They call it the yak yards, drops his shoulder, runs over guys, carries three guys in the end zone, Dibs, for a touchdown. The back shoulder catch in the second half. The guy was poised, made some big plays. And Deebo Samuels, I love this young man. I think he's going to be a big play guy. You saw him early in the game. They did that old jet sweep, Dibs, that you like to see. Guy picks up 14 yards. Boom, bam. The guy's not afraid of contact either. He's physical. He's got great hands, got great mitts. They're comparing this guy to a wonder Anquan Boldin because he's got the physicality that he brings to the game too, and he's got great hands. These two receivers that they have, everyone's making comparisons. I think we got to pump the brakes. They're saying Jalen Hurd could be kind of like a T.O. This is the kind of comparison for two good receivers. If you got T.O. and arguably those two guys on your team, they're showing you signs of that already, you're in a pretty good spot, especially with two rookies.
I think it's fair to say you can see a little T.O. and Hurd and a little Marvin Harrison and Samuel. And I think they're going to develop into those types, and you're going to be okay moving forward.
In pretty that good case, you feel really good about your wide receiver's position.
Go get yourself a Randy Moss, and you might have something.
Yeah, and maybe you have that in Marquise Goodwin. He's ready to emerge as a Randy Moss type of speed threat.
Come on, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know why I would make such a dramatic leap like that. And it's one thing to call a guy T.O. and another guy, you know, call him whoever you...
Marvin Harrison
was the other cockamaniac.
I didn't go Marvin on him. I went with, you know, the other... Anquan Boldin.
That was last hour. You went with T.O. this hour.
Yeah. No, but they said Hurd. This is not for me, though. True friend. No. No, they were making comparisons. These guys are like, wait a minute. I was like, that's kind of early to say that, you know, Hurd was comparable to, they saw some T.O. in him, and they said Anquan Boldin. They're talking about how Deebo reminds him because he's physical, can grab the ball, and he's kind of, and that's what I. That's
never
what
too
I,
early.
Yeah, but I was saying.
Get ahead of it. That way, if it happens, you can say you were first.
Yeah, one preseason game, two Hall of Famers. Yeah, we'll go ahead and compare them accordingly.
I'm pumping the brakes, but I'm saying they were saying these guys.
I'm not. I'm all in. Oh, you see all my chips in the middle. I'm holding 7-2. 7-2 off, and I'm just hoping to catch runner.
Just barrel on in.
That's my poker strategy.
That's it, runner.
runner deuces for trips.
Yeah. No one would see that coming.
Jokes aside, though, the fan base is quite excited. And on one hand, be excited. Because you know what you saw? Production. And more importantly, you saw confidence and what appeared to be a command of the early phases of the playbook. That's really all you can ask for in these early games. Guy goes out there, makes the most of his opportunity. Doesn't commit a bunch of stupid penalties, doesn't have a bunch of drops, isn't running the wrong route, isn't tipping the ball up in the air for guys to intercept. Go out there and take advantage of the situation. And that's what happened. Hurd showing incredible toughness on the first touchdown.
Yeah.
At the five, he's got the ball, he turns up field, he's got 5 yards to go. A lot of guys could try to get out of bounds, a lot of guys could go down, a lot of guys could try to work the stiff arm. He lowers the shoulder, gets into the end zone. Later in the game, second touchdown, completely different, all finesse. Running for the back corner of the end zone, corner's going with him, and then like a savvy veteran, at the last second, he turns and catches the back shoulder fade for the touchdown. That's a beautiful play that Aaron Rodgers executes better than anyone in the NFL. And Garoppolo's got to figure that one out for this year as well. You can't get down to the 2-yard line and consistently have these struggles getting in. The back shoulder fade is such an unstoppable weapon, yet guys can't figure it out. They would rather throw the jump ball fade, which seems like it never works. And then for Samuel, it's not just the big plays he made, but he picked up a pass interference that resulted in 25 yards down the field. That counts as well. That's big production. So if you're a Niner fan today, you got to feel good about what you saw in game one, but also exercise a level of caution. Remember, they weren't going against elite all-world corners in a true game situation. Right. Come week one at Tampa, it's going to be different. You're going to have to get off jam coverage. You're going to have to move a lot quicker, think a lot quicker, right? So jury's out, but what we saw, Dibs, in game one, at least gives you reason to get a little bit excited.
Very excited, actually. And when you start to look at this wide receiver room and you figure out who's going to stay and who's going to go, you know that Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd both were safe. You aren't going to draft them and then cut them, no matter how poorly they play. But the fact that they are going to be a part of this team and they look to be pretty good, if not potentially great, Now you look at the rest of the core and you say, okay, now who do we have? You know, you had the injury to Trent Taylor. He's going to be gone maybe until week one, maybe longer.
Looks like 4 to 6 weeks, fractured foot. They could have kept going with it, but the fracture would continue to get worse. So they decided shut it down now, figure it out. Could be back as early as week one, but that's best case scenario.
And could be an IR candidate, quite frankly, because, you know, broken foot as a wide receiver, it's going to take a little bit longer usually to heal and to be 100%. So if you have to hold him out for 8 weeks, then all of a sudden that hard decision you have to make becomes a little bit easier because you look at Kendrick Bourne and Jordan Matthews and, you know, Dante Pettis is a guy who you're expecting to be your number one, yet Hurd and Samuel certainly looked better in the first preseason game. So there's a lot of question marks, I think, wide receiver-wise, but the fact that those two played that well answers some of those questions.
Heading into the season, all the fantasy guys and a lot of the national analysts, when asked the question of who's a breakout candidate, who are the breakout guys this year, a lot of people pointed to Dante Pettis, second-year wide receiver out of Washington. Had a nice little rookie season. The hope is that there will be a big jump this year in Kyle Shanahan's system. The problem, however, is that while there was a ton of hype, no one's been following the reports. And the more you follow the reports, the more troubling it gets. Preseason game one, all right, not a ton of action. He had one target thrown his way. He didn't come up with anything. But in camp, what you read from just about anyone down there who's writing about this stuff, he doesn't look good. He doesn't look consistent. There's the comment that Richard Sherman's been getting on him when he takes these plays off. And then Pettis said, talk to the media about it. He's like, yeah, you know, he catches me doing that, and I got to address it. I got to come back harder the next play. Why are you taking plays off? You're in year two. You're the guy that could emerge as the number one receiver on this team. You could have a big season. Do you know who's calling your plays? That guy has gotten more out of his offenses than anybody else who's coached those same offenses. Matt Ryan's an MVP under Kyle Shanahan. Robert Griffin III, Matt Schaub had the best seasons of their careers under Kyle Shanahan. The running backs as well. This is a big opportunity. Pettis seems to be a guy right now, stock down. If you're talking stock up, stock down, right now stock appears to be down.
Right, and if you were to rank the wide receivers, you would put Hurd and Deebo Samuel ahead of him, in my opinion, not only because of the first preseason game, and you mentioned it, 17 snaps and just the one target for Dante Pettis, no catches, but the very idea of the blocking that Lowe was talking about, Jalen Hurd's ability as a blocker in the run game, and Dante Pettis, I don't know if we saw that in the first preseason game. Marquise Goodwin didn't play. Jordan Matthews, a guy who I think is on the bubble and possibly in danger of being cut. But if you're Dante Pettis, you look at this second preseason game, you're going to have Jimmy Garoppolo out there. You've got to really make an imprint and let the coaches know that you should be the number one receiver.
And I think one thing, Joe, too, we got to look at and what should be saving grace. Goodwin didn't play, so I think that it's a chance that he's looking good at camp. It's a chance that, okay, they didn't want to see him. They said, okay, Goodwin, you're not going to play because, you know, maybe he's running good routes. Maybe the guy's showing that he's ready to go. But I did see Kendall Bourne, 84, and I saw I'd like to see more of him. I'd like to see, was that just a bad game? Because I'm telling you right now, the route running wasn't superb. Blocking wasn't superb. The one play in the first quarter looks like there should have been a hold, and you saw the DB clearly grab him. But the route, he stepped him, and Kane climbed up instead of coming back down to the ball. If he would have snapped that route off, DB was gone. That was a good throw. That was him. Watching it from that angle, I'm like, man, this guy had a couple drops. And then you saw, you know, another guy you want to see play well is Richard James. Richie James Jr., you saw him early in the first quarter. They had the deep over route. The guy goes up. No one hits him, catches it, tries to make a, you know, go down to the ground, fumble, you know, let the ball incomplete. You got those guys. Those guys need to step up and play. They need to play with more consistency. If you looked at that and you said, let me watch those two guys, Kendall Bourne, and you said, and Richie James Jr., if you saw those two guys compared to the two rookies, you can reverse the role and say those two guys played like rookies and the other two guys played like second and third
well
year
said.
Players.
That's a good point.
That's how what I saw in those two. And you can't have that. So I think that you're going to see this week, Wes Walker, Kyle Shanahan, those guys, they're going like, that was unacceptable. And you're talking about what do you do if you're a coach and you need these receivers to step up because you know Tampa Bay, you're going to need these guys. You watch that tape and you show you show the route. You show Kendall, here's this route. What are you thinking? Why did you snap down? Yeah, the guy held you, but if you come down the tree, you're wide open. You make that catch, and it's not even talking about. You show and say, hey, how did these two young guys, we're expecting you guys to show them how to go in the game, set the tempo, set the tone. That's why you guys are starting off. And you two guys played like the rookies. So I think that you're going to see accountability there. And this is the time I hate, you know, when the young guys outplayed me. I think those are the times now where as coaches, you push guys. As coaches, you show them what they're doing wrong. You show them and like, look, here's a young guy that's more physical. Look at this guy. He catches the ball on the 5-yard line, Joe, like you talked about, and he turns into a running back. He puts his shoulder down. He drops his head. He carries guys in the end zone. Where are you guys at? I need plays out of you. Here's the first play of the game, you know, James. You're running a deep over. You get hit right in the hands. It hits you. Make the catch. You fall on the ground and tell me what happened here. Tell me what you're thinking. You got to put this kind of pressure on those guys, especially if you need these guys to make plays for your quarterback.
Good. This is what the good teams have. Yes. Miami in the 80s and 90s, USC under Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks under Pete Carroll. Competition. The lower parts of the roster forcing the upper parts of the roster to play better every yes. single day, or they might lose their job. Jalen Hurd, we've been hearing about him from day one of camp, and it's always about him doing something, producing something. Well, he's blocking hard down the field, and the guys don't like it. Too bad. You haven't been to the playoffs in years. Anyone who's been around during this run doesn't get to complain about that. Oh, well, he's making too many plays in the preseason. He's showing us up. Then step up. Step up. Niner fans are tired. They've been waiting around for a while for you not to win a Super Bowl, mind you. This isn't waiting around to win a Super Bowl. This is just waiting around to be somewhat competitive again. All right? The window has been too great in terms of level of competition. Now, when you sit around and you say, Cleveland Browns haven't won a Super Bowl since, or insert team here hasn't won a Super Bowl since. Okay, there are some big-time droughts. But to get to that level takes something completely different. This is a fan base asking for the team to just look competent and be somewhat competitive. All right? That's not a big ask since you haven't done anything since 2012 was the last playoff trip. Right? 8-8 under Harbaugh in 2013. No winning record since. So I like the fact that this kid's in here shaking things up. And you talk to him afterwards, he's not apologizing for anything. He sees an opportunity, lowers his head, he goes for the end zone. Good. Good. This team needs more toughness. This team can't get pushed around in two games against Arizona anymore, which leads me into this. 31 guys sat Saturday night, not all due to injuries. I get what Shanahan's doing. I don't think Solomon Thomas needed to sit. That's a guy who needs the work, in my opinion. I'm glad if they're seeing him down at camp and they feel confident in what they've got, but the fan base doesn't. And I'm not saying you coach to appease the fan base, but damn. We feel that good about Solomon Thomas right now that he doesn't need those reps because Dallas' starting line, minus Zach Martin, was out there for that first series. That you're telling me he couldn't be out there for those six plays to get some work against the best offensive line in football just to maybe see where he's at? Because from what I understand with Bosa's injury, Thomas could be playing inside and outside. I think that's a guy who screams work, who screams reps, and yet he gets the night off. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that one. I see what Shanahan's doing. I understand he wants to keep guys healthy, but that's a guy who could get some work, in my opinion.
I agree, and I was surprised that he was one of the guys who didn't see time, but then you think about the schedule that you have coming up, and I know you've got two games and a 5-day stretch in your preseason schedule, so you're going to want to be able to spot guys and not have them playing a ton in the first game and then having to play twice in that same week span. I was not surprised that he sat a lot of guys, but when it came to Solomon Thomas, I'm in the same church as you, Joe, same pew even, thinking that he's a guy who needed the work, somebody that we've all been waiting to see after the 2 years he's had where he's been underwhelming. Last year, of course, we all know about the tragedy with his sister, but this is the year where he needs to start making that impact, and I thought week one would have been a perfect time.
There were opportunities. If he doesn't want to be out there taking those reps, that's okay. I get the decision-making, but Kentavious Street ran with it. Anyone notice how he played Saturday night?
Played well.
He's the fourth-round pick from 2 years ago out of NC State. Would have been a first-rounder, but he wrecked his knee in the pre-draft workouts. So he missed all of last year, team ACL. Falls to the fourth round. Niners draft him. Nothing can happen last year. He got plenty of run in that game. He looks good, too. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's got some versatility. He was pushing. He was trying to chase guys down. Julian Taylor had a pretty good game on the inside. People are coming for it. That defensive line group is going to be highly competitive. You've got I'm not sure who wrote it up afterwards. It may have been Barrows, but there were a handful of scouts, including Seahawks general manager John Schneider, at that game Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
And you know the Seahawks need help along the defensive line. Niners got to be real careful about which guys they keep and which guys they let go, because this is that time of year where every team who needs a position, say you're in need of running backs, you're looking for the deepest teams in the NFL with running backs, knowing cutdown day's coming, knowing that these teams are going to try to stash these guys on practice squads. And guys aren't going to fall through the cracks. And everyone who's looking at the Niners is looking at one positional group, and that's defensive line. They know they've got depth there. Got to be real careful about it. So you don't feel the need to have Solomon Thomas out there showing anything? All right, I'll trust the coaching staff. But come week one,
yeah,
there's going to be judgment. And there's going to be a lot of criticism. This is not the rookie year anymore.
You're right. And I'm going to tell you right now, you can never have enough defensive linemen the way that the league is. You talk about now how teams want to get the ball out of their hand, quarterback wants to throw the ball. You're rotating defensive linemen in and out all the time now, Joe, so you're absolutely right. So you got to be careful who you're thinking you're going to release, because you know that there's going to be some teams that's going to gobble those guys up. So I think it's very, very imperative who they decide to play and who they decide to sit. So you, Solomon Thomas, I think that this would be this is that reverse Oreo, because I too believe that here's a guy that could have played. Here's a guy, you don't have to play him a whole quarter, but you just had let Solomon play the one whole series. Could have played inside, could have played out, played the three technique, played the defensive end. He could have played both those things. I don't think that would have hurt him at all. So I was too shocked. So we definitely, I'm in the same church and we're in the same pew. So, and we got this reverse Oreo going.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
What does that mean?
It's reverse Oreo would be with vanilla on the outside, chocolate on the inside.
Yeah.
I think because you and I would be the cookie and he would be the creamy filling.
Oh, it relates to us. Because I was thinking, I was like, I don't, how many, like the defensive line is not very diverse in terms of.
No,
racial profiling you seem to be.
No, I wasn't racial. Not at all. I was just talking about this. We're talking about
this. Well, no, you were racial, just not with the line, with us.
Excuse me, stewardess. I speak low. I'll go ahead and handle this one. Yeah, it's your classic reverse Oreo. It was the line, and then it was us, and then it was us, and then it was the line. It was pretty easy to follow along when you think about it.
Thank you.
Not for me. I'm still lost. Even after your explanation, I'm a little bit more lost. We'll jump back.
It's your classic reverse Oreo, Joe. It's like a Chips Ahoy and, you know. Oh, jeez.
Wouldn't a reverse Oreo be cream on the outside and cookie in the middle? That would be a reverse Oreo.
Yeah, but he was going just from a flavor standpoint. No one would ever put, I mean, that's just ludicrous to think about cream and the cookie in the middle. You got to go cookie, cream.
How do you dip in the milk?
Yeah, of course.
Right, no, I agree that it would be a problem. But when you talk about a reverse Oreo, that is a reverse Oreo. That is doing the Oreo in reverse. The Oreo is currently cookie, cream, cookie. A reverse Oreo would be cream, cookie, cream. So your take off, but that's okay.
No.
Now you trying to support it makes you even more culpable.
Not necessarily supporting it, but understanding
it. You're like
it.
Al Cowlings if Al Cowlings had opened fire when they got back to OJ's place. Yeah,
I was thinking like reverse meaning that I was thinking, okay, get two vanilla cookies and then put put chocolate in the middle.
Right, but that's not reverse. That wouldn't be the reverse. That would just be a different style of Oreo.
Yeah.
And like I said, I got your point.
Okay.
But then when he jumped in trying to support it, he just dug the hole even deeper.
Not supporting it.
Now you two have a Jeep that's just buried in the mud, and you're out there fighting in the woods with no shirts
on.
And your shoes are lost in the woods as well.
Trying to bring you up to speed with exactly what Lowe's thinking, because I'm locked in, Lowe, you and I. What I was going to ask you before we got derailed by this cookie talk is the practice squad.
Yeah.
Can you put anybody on the practice squad? And when you put somebody on the practice squad, are they now vulnerable to be signed by any other team at that point?
Yeah. If you put
first 2 years, I think you're only eligible for the practice squad your
first two years
in the NFL.
So you couldn't
be three.
You couldn't take a veteran and put him on the practice squad.
Can't be a 10-year guy.
Oh.
Like Brady's not going to the practice squad.
No.
And anybody on your practice squad can be signed by any other team.
If you're putting them on your roster, you can't sign them away to put on your practice squad.
Gotcha.
But part of the whole practice squad thing is you're not going to stop these guys from getting real opportunities. So if
and
you're going to sign them
to
bring them up, then there's nothing that can be
Kentavious Street's a great example, because he was one of the guys I wrote down about somebody who flashed. He looked incredible. A player like that, and I don't think they're going to do this, but if they want to put him on the practice squad and Seattle wanted him, they could just come straight out and sign him and add them to their active roster.
What you do is you put him on the 53, and then if you don't love him on game day, you just deactivate him for game day. Because what's game day, 46? 46, I believe.
Yeah.
So you've got a handful of guys you got to sit, which leads into the backup quarterback conversation.
They still them. And the teams are watching. So teams try to do exactly that, hide them on that, cut them before that date, and the team's like, boop, grab them right then, and like, oh, you're on our active.
Well, no, that's not. Okay, you're thinking about something different. I'm just talking about on game day, you're just deactivating. He's not on the 46 man.
Okay.
He's still 53 okay.
Still in your 53.
He's talking about, like, baseball-type moves, which also some of these guys try to do.
Right.
Cut this guy, sign this guy, and then re-sign this guy next week. The Patriots famously signed some guy, like, four times in one season. They just kept bringing him in when they had an opportunity, and then they cut him and then re-sign him. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Street's an investment. You knew when he blew his knee out that he wasn't going to be, well, we'll give him a short leash. You brought him in because you want to stash him and work him up and see what you get from him. He looked good. He ran with the opportunity. That leads to the question of the quarterback situation. Mullins and Beathard, I think most would agree that it was pretty even in the chase for number two based on what we saw in the game. Both had some good moments. Both threw bad interceptions. It looks like Beathard will get the opportunity to go after Garoppolo in Denver for preseason game number two, and then Mullins will follow him up. Do you carry three quarterbacks? Because some of the concern is you wouldn't be able to stash one of these guys.
Right.
That someone might be looking for one of these quarterbacks to back them up down the road because they put plenty of tape out there. Do you carry three and then risk having to carry one less wide receiver or one less defensive back or one less linebacker or D lineman? Or do you ride with two, knowing Garoppolo's got that injury concern?
I think it comes down to need, Joe. And I think this situation, if you think that you need a receiver, if none of these guys have, if there's guys that you say you have question marks about, or you say, God, we need to carry six receivers, and you know, because we're gonna carry five, but now we need to carry six. Okay, we're going to see. I'll pick up the phone and see if there's a trade value. One of these guys is probably going to be, we know, going to be the number two, but you don't, do you need three? Probably not. Because if you have to go to your third, then something's going on, and that's not a good thing. So you're going to look at this situation and saying, okay, what is his value? What is Beathard's value? Is it a situation that I can go get a fourth round or a third round? Or can I get a player? Can I swap a player? Do I need a defensive lineman? Can I get a tackle? Can I pick up the phone and call a team that has a decent tackle that I can swap out for a quarterback? There's a lot of value here. The 49ers are, in a very good position having two guys that are capable of going in there and playing pretty well with the right amount of talent around.
It just depends on what decisions you make as it pertains to that 53-man roster. And
right.
I think part of that, too, is what you were talking about, Lo, with injuries and productivity. For example, you got Nicky Bosa right now who's unable to go because of his injury. If he's ready for week one, does that mean that you're going to cut an extra defensive lineman, or are you going to try to keep him on your roster so as to not expose him to another team possibly poaching? And I think the same thing goes for the running back position because you don't know yet what you're going to have with Jerick McKinnon. So how deep do you want to go in guys that you're keeping on your roster, whether it's Raheem Mostert who can play special teams, or maybe he becomes somebody who is a victim because you need to keep another guy who can run the ball more?
What do you think about the Antonio Brown situation?
Hmm.
We said we were going to touch on this. So
Thanks.
Brown is suffering from extreme frostbite on his feet, and there's not much of a timetable for when he's going to be ready to play football. Before that could get like full-on weird, it started getting weird, but before it could get full-on weird, the news story breaks that Brown was one of a handful of players, like five guys, who were still wearing an older version of NFL helmets. That's what he preferred. Apparently, according to him, he could see the ball better. And this helmet has been discontinued. It is no longer allowed. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't want to have to transfer over to the new helmet. So he's now refusing to play football, saying he'll retire if he's not allowed to use this helmet. Apparently, originally, he said, well, Brady and Rodgers get to use it, so I should be allowed to. And then the Raiders went out and got footage of Brady and Rodgers at practice using the new helmets and then showed it to him and said, no, they've switched as well. So what he did was he took his old Steeler helmet, according to this one report, and had it spray painted like a Raider helmet and tried to get away with that. And now he's saying he's going to retire. If the NFL doesn't let him use this old helmet, one that's not deemed to be as safe as the current ones, that he is going to retire from football. John Gruden's comment, quote, I support this guy. I think that's what needs to be said. And he said this after their win over the Rams on Saturday. I don't know what anybody's writing or what anybody thinks, but this foot injury wasn't his fault. This was a total accident. It really wasn't his fault, and it's a serious issue. I know that some people are joking about it, but it's really not a laughing matter. The guy is hurt, he didn't do anything wrong, and the helmet thing is a personal matter to him. So, imagine you're playing on this team. What do you make of this story? You are aware of, you and I went to see the CTE movie together.
Yeah, I think that right now, Gruden's saying the right thing. you're a head coach that, if you look at your tenure thus far, has it been great? No. Has it been, I'd say, below average? I think you would have to being honest, if you look at what they've been able to do, what last year the receiver that they, another receiver they brought in,
and Martavis Bryant.
Thank you, Martavis Bryant, brought him in, thinking this was going to be a guy, and you end up cutting him. You gave up, and you end up
third round pick,
and you didn't even keep him, Daniel. And you're still trying to replace Khalil Mack. I understand you got draft picks, which is great, but did he walk through the door? And now you got rid of Amari Cooper, who's we've seen to be a Pro Bowl. Is he Antonio Brown? By no stretch of imagination, but is he a good receiver? Absolutely. You had two proven commodities that you got rid of, and now what you get in return, has it shown you thus far that it's, that you got your ROI, your return on investment? And right now, that's no. And I think that Gruden is doing a great job of saying, hey, I support my player. You have to support this guy because you traded, you went out and you put invested in this guy. You hope the NFL bends the rules for this guy because you need him. This is an unbelievable amount of talent in Antonio Brown, who's arguably one of the best receivers this league has seen. And all of a sudden he's threatening to retire. But don't you think, we talked about it before this trade even went down. We talked about, hey, what about the other things that go with this guy? And you still decided to go. So I understand where Gruden's at, and I understand he has to fight.
Has to.
He got to. But you also have to understand, was the writing on the wall? That's all. And being fair, was it on the wall?
And here's hold this. It for one sec. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. It is great to have you with us. Kevin Mitchell, 1989 National League MVP, will join us in 30 minutes at 8:30 to talk about, well, one, standing us up on Friday, and two, Will Clark. The announcement came out over the weekend that Will Clark's number will be retired next season. Ian Williams at 9:05, Cam Inman at 9:30. Dibs, your thoughts on Antonio Brown?
Well, this is from the NFL PR guy on Twitter, Brian McCarthy, and he says, without using Antonio Brown's name, that the player can't practice or play in games with equipment that's not approved. If he doesn't play or practice, he's in breach of his contract and doesn't get paid. NFL policy is that helmets have to be certified by NOSCAE, which is an organization of safety. They don't certify equipment that's older than 10 years. So I know what you're saying, Lo, about John Gruden and the Raiders. They got to fight for their player, and they got to try to dispute and argue this. But this, to me, from the NFL, is pretty clear that they can't, you know, for obvious liability purposes, allow a guy to go out there with equipment that's more than 10 years old. So
the Raiders know that.
Yeah, but they have to defend their guy. Right. So I wonder how this is going to get resolved, because it seems to me that the NFL is dug in. You know, all we've been saying about the NFL is you don't care about players, you don't care about player safety. So how is the league going to backtrack on a player safety issue just for one guy, even though the one guy wants his helmet?
They're not going to. The one guy doesn't want his helmet. The one guy more than anything else wants money, and he's not going to walk away from that money. Antonio Brown has made it very clear the most important thing to him is his money. I'm not saying that's wrong, but let's stop trying to see the world for what we want it to be, and let's start trying to see the world for what it is. There are reports of this guy in meetings looking at his bank account on his phone as he's not paying attention to what's going on. That's one of the things that has surfaced from Michael Silver's report last week, that he's looking at his bank accounts. He cares about money more than anything else. So he's going to play. Now, whatever he does with the helmet will get resolved, but he's not walking away from that cash. So that's first and foremost. Understand who you're dealing with. He's a guy who wants money. He prioritizes money more than anything else. He's going to make sure he gets that money. So he's going to play. Number two, as to what Gruden had to say about it, Gruden had no other option. This is a guy that needs to be coddled. You didn't have the option of calling him out. You didn't have the option of tough love. You didn't have the option of criticism. You had one option as a head coach, and you took it. You did exactly what you needed to do. You grabbed his back and supported him because you cannot push back against him. He's in charge, not you. You are not in charge of that guy. That guy's made it very clear.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.